Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
In October 2012, the east coast of America was hit by one of the most devastating storms in its history. Hurricane Sandy started off as a tropical storm in the Caribbean, but it did its most high-profile damage here, in the dense coastal city of New York. I'm Angela Saini, and in this week's Discovery on the BBC World Service, I'm finding out how New York plans to use science and engineering to guard itself against the sorts of floods that caused such devastation last year.
Hurricane Sandy crashing on shore. 60 million Americans will feel its power.
If you are still in Zone A and can find a way to leave, leave immediately.
The water just rose so rapidly, there was no escaping. We were carrying our kids on our back and our wives.
Don't be fooled. Don't look out the window and say, well, you know what, it doesn't look so bad. The worst is still coming.
Debris like pieces of the boardwalk have come for three blocks. Huge waves crashing up and over. Did you see that one?
Lower Manhattan was plunged into darkness. Electricity generators exploded in spectacular fashion.
What's going on? I don't know what's going on.
I think all of us obviously have been shocked by the force of Mother Nature as we watch it on television. At the same time, we've also seen nurses at NYU Hospital carrying fragile newborns to safety. We've seen incredibly brave firefighters in Queens, waist deep in water, battling infernos and rescuing people in boats.
Make no mistake about it, this was a devastating storm, maybe the worst that we have ever experienced.
More than 6 months on, rebuilding after the superstorm is still the main priority. The cost of emergency aid across the US is more than $50 billion, and several thousand people are still without homes.
Good morning. Good morning, how are you? Please watch your step.
Here, on a boat in New York Harbor, a conference is taking place to confront the next major challenge: how to protect the city should something like Sandy come along again. Roland Lewis is president of the Metropolitan Waterfront Association, which represents businesses in the area.
With Superstorm Sandy, you know, we were all in a bit of shock. It was a traumatic event for the entire region. We are a coastal city. We all recognize we're a coastal city, and we're island people. We live on islands and peninsulas in this area. Everybody's thinking about the waterfront now, and we're very excited to have this forum. We're expecting over 600 folks, and they're the leading thinkers, the academics, the business folks, environmentalists, policymakers, government people. Anybody who cares about the waterfront is going to be on this boat, and they're going to have, I think, very intense and good discussions about what policies we're going to make going forward to make our city more resilient.
The conference comes at a time when New York is holding elections for a new mayor, a hugely powerful position in the city.
We also need to engage the public, to go out into the communities that were most hard hit by...
Unsurprisingly, Sandy is playing a key part in the candidates' election platforms.
...about what they're experiencing, seeing, feeling, and what their vision is for their communities as well.
And we all know that we wish it didn't take... tragedies to sometimes wake us up and reframe our focus, but it has always been the case. In the aftermath of Sandy, we have a chance, not just because of federal aid, but in part because of federal aid, to get some of this right.
I want to be the next mayor of the city of New York. I can't be more direct than that. It is going to be important for the next mayor of the city of New York not just to look to develop, but also to develop better and smarter and stronger. If anything, Hurricane Sandy has taught us that we are vulnerable.
New York mayoral candidates Christine Quinn, Bill de Blasio, and Bill Thompson. The strange thing about all this is that 4 years ago, a very similar conference was held in this city. Except then, the only people to turn up were a handful of engineers and scientists. Politicians weren't interested. Malcolm Bowman, an oceanographer at Stony Brook University in New York, organised that meeting back in 2009.
The conference was called Against the Deluge, Storm Surge Barriers to Protect New York City. I've been very concerned for many years that New York City, like London, is built close to the water's edge, that there are perennial threats, and with climate change, rising sea levels, it's going to get more intense. And so we started to research this. I started the Stony Brook Storm Surge Research Group, and we got together professors and our students to look into this. And then in 2005, I published an op-ed piece in the New York Times, an opinion editorial. It was called A City at Sea, and I went through all the threats that were coming for New York City, and the bottom line was it's not a question of if New York City is flooded, but when. The 2009 conference was sponsored by the American Society of Civil Engineers, and we had 150 people there, students, professional engineers, people working in different agencies.
What was the political response to it?
The political response to that conference was to ignore it. In fact, if I remember back, there was not one representative from the city of New York there. I think it may be too strong to say that, you know, they were told not to attend, but they ignored it.
Why do you think that is?
Because it was outside the framework, the box that they were looking through, the frame, and it seemed too speculative, too provocative.
You must have felt pretty vindicated then when Sandy hit and your vocalized fears about the threat of a big storm and floods came true.
Well, yes, I did feel vindicated. I felt like the biblical Noah that had been warning everybody there was a great flood coming and everybody should start building the ark. Of course, everybody laughed at old Noah. They ignored him. And guess what happened? They built the ark. He and his family and the animals were saved and everybody else was drowned. So I feel like it was almost like a prophecy coming true when Sandy came barreling. I could not predict when. And nobody on this planet could predict when, but it happened. And it happened a lot sooner than anybody dared to admit.
And now, a few years on from your original 2009 conference and 6 or so months on from Hurricane Sandy, here we are at a conference with mayoral candidates for New York City speaking about their concerns and talking about the need for resilience and also the need for some kind of solution. How does that make you feel?
I feel good about this because I feel we're making some headway. I think Sandy is such a wake-up call.
Now that politicians have finally started listening to the scientists, the headway that Malcolm Bowman ultimately wants to see is for the city to start building a giant barrier, shielding it from future storm surges and rising sea levels, similar to the Thames Barrier in London, which was built after a devastating flood in 1953. He's so convinced that this is the ideal solution that for the conference in 2009, he invited 4 engineering companies from the US, the UK and the Netherlands to present designs for how they thought this barrier should look.
We gave them 4 geographic locations. We said, go to it. Design these barriers and let's talk about it.
Can you give me some idea of the designs that these companies came up with?
Well, the designs the companies came up with were all quite different. The Outer Harbour Gateway was the most extensive, probably the most expensive perhaps, which was a elevated causeway, or bridge really, across the 5-mile opening of New York Harbour. And then in the centre are these swinging gates, but like saloon doors. Similar design was used for what we call the Verrazano Narrows. That's where the big Verrazano Bridge is, about 1 mile across. Then behind Staten Island was more of a, what you might call swinging gates or sluice gates that you might find in canals. And then in the fourth one, the Upper East River, it was like they are building in Venice, Italy, where there are some flaps, if you like, hinged flaps that are lying on the bottom of the river. And then a storm surge comes along and they pump it full of compressed air. They're made of hollow concrete, and believe it or not, they will hinge up from the bottom, stick up, and block the surges.
You're with Discovery on the BBC. I'm Angela Saini. That first design, the New York Harbor Gateway, was a brainchild of a British engineering firm, Halcro, later acquired by the US company CH2M Hill. Further inland, in a tower block overlooking Ground Zero, are their offices. Graham Forsyth is an engineer still working here who has devoted his life to building and maintaining water gates and barriers. In 2009, he was the one who came up with the Harbour Gateway design. He based it on a huge flood protection barrier he worked on in St. Petersburg in Russia following floods there in 1999.
There's a lot of similarities between New York and St. Petersburg. They're both cities which sit on a bay which is connected to the ocean. The water depths are very similar in terms of where we were thinking of putting a barrier. And the storm surge challenge was about the same as was the tidal range. So in fact, what we were able to do with the St. Petersburg work was to take the completed design and basically take it apart and say that we're going to put different elements of the design into the barrier for New York. And we knew that it worked. There was a period on the 26th of December 2012. The barrier was closed for 12 hours. And had the barrier not been closed, the city would have been subjected to its fourth highest recorded flood. And in fact, the people of St. Petersburg didn't really realise that there had been a flood at all. It was just that good.
Do you think New York would have benefited had that barrier been built?
The surge that came in was just over 14 feet. And I should explain that the storm surge is basically it's the surge that appears on top of a tide. So that and the issue with Sandy was it came in on the top of the tide, and that's why the surge was so big. But we had designed our barrier for a surge of 20 feet. So we were fairly confident that had the barrier been there, it would have protected the city.
So, just like for Malcolm Bowman, Hurricane Sandy was also a NOAA moment for engineers like Graham Forsyth. Had their barrier designs been built 3 years earlier, New York might have been saved from some of the destruction caused by Hurricane Sandy. But to this day, the idea of building a storm surge barrier is still contentious. Even New Yorkers, the one who suffered the brunt of Sandy, are divided on the issue. As I found out, on the streets of Columbus Circle in the heart of Manhattan.
I feel like with the crazy weather situations that we've experienced in the past 5 years, I think in all likelihood we could see something like this happen again. We've had two hurricanes in 2 years, which is more hurricanes, I think, than New York has seen in probably 50 years. So I do think it's worth it.
I kind of don't, actually, just
really?
because it seems like the destruction's going to happen anyway, and they're going to get worse. I mean, if predictions come true, like they say storms get more and more intense, we can build things now, but then if they become worse, then they're just going to be destroyed anyway. So it's a lot of money that's spent that maybe doesn't need to be spent that way.
Well, we used to live in Brooklyn, and we a lot of the businesses that we know and used to frequent were totally devastated by the floods. So I think it's definitely a good project. It's just with any project in New York, you're going to get a tremendous amount of back and forth about how to do it and how much, you know. So the reality of it is, like, you know, how long will it take to do something like that, you know? So, but yes, I mean, theoretically, it's probably a good idea.
So what do you think? Do you think it's worth building a barrier around New York?
Yeah, I do think it's a good idea because a lot of my friends from school lost their homes. So and they had to stay in hotels for a few weeks until their houses were rebuilt.
Do you think it's a good idea to build a barrier for New York?
No, largely because I'm not sure that it would work. I don't question the engineering. I think the engineers are correct. I question the execution and whether it would actually be built to the expectations of the engineers.
It sounds like you don't trust the city.
I don't.
Skepticism aside, this area actually isn't a stranger to these kinds of projects. Three storm surge barriers have already been built in the region, as engineer Graham Forsyth explains.
In 1938, there was a hurricane came through here which was called the Long Island Express. Crossed Long Island, kind of missed New York, but crossed Long Island and clobbered the mainland on the far side. And there are, in fact, three storm surge barriers on the mainland in three of the states, which were built in the 1960s. And that was kind of prompted initially by the 1938 hurricane, and then there was another hurricane came through in 1955, I think.
So the lesson of history is that very big storms or floods can instigate political will to build barriers, but it takes a very long time.
Well, one would think so. One would think so. But you then have a look at what happened in with Katrina coming into New Orleans, and there they managed to turn the whole thing around in about 4 years, which is just astonishing. It's just astonishing. And that has to be a model for the way that things are going, because there's a big risk that the threat is increasing all the time.
But is that true? How high is the threat really? There are two major problems with convincing policymakers to buy into the plan for a giant barrier around New York. First, of course, is the expense. It could cost as much as $10 billion. Secondly, not everyone is convinced that it's needed. Sandy may have been a devastating storm, but it was also highly unusual. So, there is a second option for New York. Simply do nothing. To see how feasible that is, I went to see Michael Oppenheimer, a geoscientist at Princeton University and a resident of New York, who's an expert on climate change.
We had a large surge. It occurred with a tide that was near the full moon, which means the high tides are even higher. This combination of effects with the particular trajectory of the storm, which put New York City on the side with the biggest surge and the most powerful winds, combined to create a very unusual situation. So the last storm with a flood level, anything like this, might have been a hurricane which came close to the city in 1821.
Does that mean that New York doesn't have to worry about the future if it's so unusual, if it was a confluence of three different factors which in themselves are fairly unusual? Then what's the worry? Why does New York have to stress about the future?
Good question. The worry is the risk of these high flood levels is increasing for two reasons. Number one, sea level is rising due to global warming. The sea level is already in this area about a foot higher than it was 100 years ago. So that's one reason. The second reason is that we believe that tropical storms like this one, tropical cyclones, are going to become more intense, so that the likelihood of a really intense hurricane, more intense than this one, will increase in the future. And the combination of more intense cyclonic winds with higher sea level means that the risk of this sort of flood happening is increasing, and increasing rapidly, so that the kind of flood which occurs, say, every 500 years now, by the end of this century, might occur every 20 years.
I think the public are fairly aware that sea levels are rising because of the polar ice caps are melting. But why would storms become more frequent?
The energy from tropical cyclones like hurricanes comes from the evaporation of water from the ocean surface. That water feeds both moisture into the storm, and in addition, as it reaches the higher levels, as it's sucked up into the center of this vortex, the water condenses at high altitude. And when water condenses, it releases energy into the atmosphere that it condenses into, so that the storms, we believe, will become both moister and more energetic as the ocean surface warms. And that's exactly what's happening. The ocean surface is warming. In fact, one of the reasons this storm may have reached hurricane intensity at all is because the ocean temperatures in the Atlantic were higher.
The difficulty for politicians, of course, is that they need to have some degree of certainty before they can go ahead with infrastructure changes. Now, I imagine people have come to you following Hurricane Sandy and said, what is the likelihood of another storm happening? How high could floods go? When will that happen?
You know, what do we pay our politicians to do but make judgments based on uncertainty, and then spend public money and exert leadership appropriately in the face of that uncertainty? You have to plan not for the risk as you see it today, but for the risk of 30, 50, 100 years from now.
Even if they do want to act, policymakers have multiple options. Instead of a storm surge barrier, some leaders in New York are advocating for basic changes, different building codes to make homes and offices more flood resilient, moving electrical units from basements to higher ground, and maybe even relocating people from the edges of the water inland.
This is part of the question of retreat, and I think it's a great idea if it's carried out in a hard-headed way. Which areas are hard to defend? Which areas, if you pulled the infrastructure out of them, would grow back into natural wetlands or beaches and provide a barrier protecting the city behind it? It's the kind of advanced thinking we really need to look at and analyze at a detailed level. And I'm sure if we took a hard-headed look, we would find plenty of areas that could be let go back to nature, let's say, and that would both reduce the future costs of protecting residents in those areas while at the same time protecting the rest of the city behind those areas.
Geoscientist Michael Oppenheimer. Another alternative to a barrier that's gaining popularity is an ecological solution. At the moment, as you walk along New York's harbour, you'll see concrete walls and highways. There's a sharp divide between the water and the people. Kate Orff, a landscape architect and assistant professor at Columbia University, thinks this divide should be softened by reintroducing marine life to the coast and creating new spaces that can naturally absorb floodwaters. Her idea, which she calls oyster texture, is being exhibited at the National Academy Museum in New York. I met her there so she could explain it to me.
What is this? This looks like a fishing net.
Yes, it's actually a material that's used widely in the aquaculture industry. It's called fuzzy rope. And what it is mussels can attach to this rope and oysters can attach to this rope because it has a sort of a texture and a quality to it that they can latch onto. And the fuzzy rope was a kind of a part of our jump-starting this ecology because basically we've eliminated places for oysters and mussels to kind of live. We've eliminated the substrate, so now we need to reintroduce substrate in various forms to get them to come back.
It's easy to forget when you look at New York, especially Manhattan with its huge skyscrapers and big highways, that there used to be, for a very long time ago, a very natural harbor life with marine animals. What you want to restore that?
I think restore is probably not the right word, but I think what I have done and what oyster texture does is look to the past for clues as to how our future could be. So part of the oyster texture project involved mapping the historical evolution of the harbor, which was, it was slower water, we had soft coastlines, we had eelgrass, mussels, oyster beds covered almost a quarter of the harbor. You know, 1700 to 1900, really oystering completely collapsed. But prior to that, oysters were a primary source of protein. Oyster shells were a building material. And oyster carts were once as ubiquitous as the hot dog cart is.
It sounds from what you're saying as though oyster culture wouldn't be able to protect New York completely from the floodwaters of something like Hurricane Sandy. But what kind of protection could it offer?
Oyster reefs or even coral reefs around the world, these are nature's wave attenuators, and it works deep in the water column to slow the water. And the other thing is because of its very articulated and crenulated surfaces, you know, think of the very, you know, the fine detail of a coral reef or the kind of mosaic that you would see on an oyster shoal, it breaks up the sort of the velocity of that water and sort of pushes it in many different directions. You know, it's also part of this kind of paradigm shift about what infrastructure is. I think we're moving away from this kind of monocultural ideas of singular fix of, you know, to one problem that may create, in fact, other problems, right? Because we're right now, we're taking down dams all over the world because they've blocked rivers and they've blocked fish populations from breeding grounds, and we have to be a little bit smarter.
I can't help wondering whether cost might also be one reason why this idea has become politically popular. A storm surge barrier would be very, very expensive. How much would this cost?
My joke was actually that we could start it with a bake sale, the notion that you could start very small and begin to build up over time. But But I think the reality is there would be a certain upfront kind of capital cost for the basic infrastructure and rock piles. And so the point is you can start now, you can build up resilience over time.
Landscape architect Kate Orff. That word, resilience, has been on the lips of everyone I've spoken to. In some ways, New York is becoming a test ground for the rest of the world in how to deal with the effects of climate change. If this wealthy, powerful city can get it right, then maybe there's hope for the rest of us. In the battleground between the politicians, the environmentalists, and the scientists, Malcolm Bowman, the self-professed knower of Hurricane Sandy, is still convinced that an old-fashioned solution is the right way to go. He believes that the only way to save New York from storms and floods in the future is a great big barrier. But given rising sea levels, even that, centuries from now, may turn out to be a temporary fix.
I think it's the only sensible solution in the long term. It's in our future. I mean, like it or not, if we want New York City to exist pretty much as the way it is now, it's in our future. So we should not stick our heads in the sand. We should not start pouring concrete. We should start planning. And maybe 25 years from today, there will be an official opening, a magnificent barrier system built, and we will be here to officially open it. Some of my colleagues that I respect, you know, say, look, Malcolm, in the long term, New York City is doomed. So let's start retreating right now, and let's start evacuating. And I say, well, if we can protect the city for another 200 years, I think we've done a great job, and we should do that at the same time planning for the eventual retreat from the coast.
I'm Angela Saini, and you've been listening to Discovery. If you'd like to hear it again, you can download a podcast from the website at bbcworldservice.com.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. The details of them all go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.